This is The Chemical Box, episode number 4. Luckily, though, I won't have any screaming neighbors this recording session, or like, you know, loud hip-hop music in the background.
You need the hip-hop, man.
I know. I think I do, actually, because it made me sound kind of cool for once. Like, it was like I was talking about, like, Spider-Man, and I had, like, Kanye in the background or something.
No, you're like the next Drake, you know, you're trying to fight back against yeah. The next Justin Bieber, you know, according to his movie trailer.
Hey, man, I'm swimming in all that money. Just come and find me, Nemo. I mean, that's poetry right there. But yeah, how you guys doing this week?
Yep.
A bad week for you or what?
I just wanted to hear what Gene was up to. They haven't talked since.
Yeah.
Nothing. Sure.
I actually had an oddball comic shop experience today. I figured I should tell you about because Gene's here and everything.
What's the comic shop situation then, Gene? Still the same, or?
Yeah. Well, I probably won't be back for a little bit, but yeah, I want to see what happens next time I go.
I had an odd experience today at the comic shop, actually. I went, because I'm back home, so I went to the, like, usual shop I was going to, and I just went in because, like, I didn't have any backing boards, and, like, I'm trying to, like, organize all my stuff, and, like, all the singles I had, like, at school I brought back, and I wanted to, like, put them away and everything. And I went to go get backing boards at the shop, and I still had a pull list going on there, and I never canceled it. So, like, immediately when I walked in, it kind of, like, the guy did the same thing I think he did to Eugene, was, like, he immediately, like, he came up to me, like, called me by name, and he's like, well, here's your pull books right here. And then, like, he handed them to me.
What were they? Did you even look?
It was Shadowland Daredevil, an issue of Spawn, $1.99, actually, the Masterpiece issue.
Okay.
Couple issues of Captain America, and then he had like the Paul Cornell Batman and Robins set aside for me, and I don't want those. But he was just like, immediately handing these books to me, and he's just like, here's your pool. And then, like, before I could even say anything, he takes out like my pool sheet, and he's like, do you want to like continue any of these titles? You want to cancel stuff and everything? And I'm just like looking at this pile of like shit comics I have in my hand, like Batman and Robin without Grant Morrison, Shadowland Daredevil, and an issue of Spawn. And I just look at it, and I'm like, yeah, I think I'm going to cancel my pull list. And he just kind of looked at me like he was disappointed and stuff. And then, like, as he kind of walked away, I, like, snuck all the books back onto the shelf so I wouldn't have to buy them.
Nice.
Wouldn't he have noticed, though, like, when you came up later without any of the said books?
Well,
it depends, because if you come up with something, they don't notice. They don't even notice to put it into your shit on time anyway.
Yeah, exactly. The way I thought of it was like, all right, I'm going to pay $9 for backboards. And then I did pick up 2 issues of the Tony Daniel Batman that's coming out now, because I was kind of interested in it, and I did kind of feel bad. Like, I was like, he did order this stuff for me. Maybe I should buy something. But at the same time, I was just like, you know what? Fuck this guy. Like, why do I have to give him my money? But I decided to go with a nice version of myself and just buy, like, 2 comics and then backboards. And he wasn't even the guy that rung me out anyway. It was the other dude working. I didn't have that awkward situation with it, so either. I just got the fuck out of there, and I don't think I'm going
to. I'll wait for the store owner to get on the phone or something, then the next dude will ring me up, and I'll just store everything, every single thing he gave me. I'll find a place for it.
Exactly.
I usually try to put it back in the home, but sometimes it doesn't make it there.
What do you mean the home? Like the place it deserves on the shelf? Or?
Right. Yeah. Like where all the uncannies are.
I did that. I didn't like throw. Like I put the Daredevil issues where they needed to go and everything. But I don't know. And then like it was just like a typical comic shop experience. Where I walked in, and I was like, I kind of forgot how much I really like disliked that place. Mm-hmm. It was just a bunch of old dudes, like 40-year-old dudes, just bitching about stuff like all the time. And they were talking about variant covers. Like I was overhearing these conversations about variant covers. And, like, someone was talking about Peter David Aquaman and was saying, like, it was a masterpiece or something. And I just, like, looked and I'm like, there's a reason I don't hang out here. Like, these are not my people when it comes to comics. And I just got angry. And when I left, I just kind of decided, I don't think I'm going back there for a while.
Well, on the plus side, though, at least you were actually able to end the madness.
Yeah, thank God.
You know? before it got like too bad, like where it was like literally like $400 worth of books or something, or more than that.
I wouldn't.
Mine was $175 worth of books. I put it back, and then by the time I got rung up on the register, it was like $91.
Jesus Christ, man! Like how much stuff did you not want that they like give to you?
About 47 to 50 books.
Wow.
Shit, I don't even get. He gave me every goddamn mini Marvel put out for no reason. Like, yeah. all because I was getting Hulk and I was getting Thor. So he gives me every Hulk, every Thor for no reason. And then he'll just give me like issue 3 of some event.
I'm it's like, just, it just like shows you how desperate some of these shop owners are to like sell some of these books. And it's just like, if you can't sell these like shit miniseries, why do you order them? Like, if nobody's going to buy them, why do you order them?
The thing I don't get is, Joe's been to my shop. The shit I don't get is ordering shit in surplus. It's like nobody's getting the breakfast cereal bobbleheads.
But, like, you know, like a book like Thunder Agents or something, like Joe was telling me, like, his shop only ordered, like, 3 copies of the second issue and sold it out. Like, that's a book that's obviously in demand, so order more. Morning Glories. Like, Nick Spencer was doing this cool rant on Twitter yesterday. I don't know if you saw it, Joe. But he was like,
like
Morning Glories, like it sells out every issue. You think shops would have learned like by now? It's on issue 5 almost to order more of it, and it's like,
this is what my shop does. They had a whole bunch of stacks of Morning Glories, but all like the second and third printing that are untouched. Now they're gonna be like, they're not gonna order as many because they're dumb. Instead of ordering the initial,
order the first print
in a big number, exactly. They got a shit ton of these second printers. I'm like, you guys don't know. And I'm like, that's common sense. You don't do that.
Yeah. And it's just like, I mean, I would, like, me personally, I wouldn't mind buying a second, third printing. But, like, I read Morning Glories on Comixology, the second and third issue. So I'm not going to buy copies of it when I already read it. Like, I don't really care. Like, if I eventually want it in print, I can get a trade or something. And it's just like.
But the thing is, you don't lose because either the first printings go or you can mark them up and then they'll go anyway.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's just...
All right, let's talk about some comic books.
Well, hold on. I want to say that I listened to the Splash Page podcast because I figured you want to hear this. Awesome. I listened to 2 episodes. I listened to that episode you originally told me to listen to where they commented on comics podcasting.
Yes.
Which was actually a very small part of the episode, but I really like enjoyed that. Like, listening to that... Because I listened to Splash Page before when you told me about it, and I didn't enjoy it that much. But I don't know. Coming back to that, like... I don't know. I guess I was in the right mindset this time around. I really just got into that show.
It's refreshing, like the way they talk about books.
It is. It's almost kind of like I found comics podcasts, like for the first time again.
Yeah.
Like that sounds corny, but like that's how it felt listening to that show. And then the Joe Casey episode was just all kinds of awesome. That guy, like, I mean, I've read Godland before and I really liked it, but that guy is now on my list of like anytime
I
see him.
He's always been on my list, but
anytime I see him from now on a book, I'm probably gonna get it because he is just a really cool, like, down to earth dude.
Have you ever heard an interview with a creator like that before?
No,
never. Like, there was that open and like that, like, he just doesn't.
It was just 3 hours of like open mic, really.
Yeah,
and it was like a lot of good stuff they were talking about, like the Wildstorm talk they were having. I really like some of the things he was saying on Butcher Baker about that upcoming project, and I don't know, man. Like, that was just a great interview, and I don't like that's a show like I'm really excited to like for next week. I kind of got the same feeling like when I was listening to 11 o'clock, like where I was really excited for every week of it. I got that feeling for Splash Page now. Like, that is my comic show. And I really like Tim and Chad as, like, personalities. And it reminds me kind of the Crank cast in a little bit of a way, too.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Like, Chad actually reminds me of Crank.
Of Crank,
yeah. Yeah, in a good way. He reminds me of Crank. And that was really kind of welcoming, too. And,
yeah, because he always does that, yeah. You know, he always do that kind of, like... Kind of agrees, but kind of doesn't.
And he also has that personality that I like. Crank has, and I think I kind of have it too at times. Like, if there's certain things he cares about, he'll really talk about it. But if he doesn't care, he doesn't really say shit.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I am at times too. And Crank's like that too on the Crank. I don't know. Like, it was a really good experience listening to that show. I'm gonna be tuning in.
I'm happy to hear that because you know me, I fucking blew up at you last time. You're like, that show isn't that great. I was like, no, you're wrong.
Yeah. No, they actually like talk about it. Like, they get into the work and everything, and it's really interesting. I really like the way those guys talk about comics. But you know, I just wanted to say that because I knew I figured you would care. So
yeah, I was curious to hear what you thought about it.
Yeah, so really good stuff. Yeah, comics. If you guys want to talk about some comics, where do you want to go? What do you want to talk?
What'd
about?
You read, Gene? What was?
I have all the Batman shit. I got Uncanny X-Force 2, Generation Hope, and the Thor.
Of the stuff you listed, I read Uncanny X-Force and the Generation Hope and the Thor.
And the Batman, right?
Yeah, and all the Batman stuff.
Okay.
So, I don't know, just pick something. Pick what you guys want to talk about. What are you most excited about?
I'm just doing a quick look because I read a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Here's what I wanted to say, though. I basically kind of read everything I had from, like, the last couple of months. There's still a couple of books I still have to read. But I have to say, I don't know, comics are pretty awesome right now. I don't know why everybody's so, like, oh, God, I fucking hate comics. Like, I feel like everybody hates comics right now. Comics are so terrible.
Yeah.
But I have to say, like, especially mainstream comics right now, I think are the best they've been in a long time.
Yeah,
but see, that's the thing. I've turned off all that shit. I haven't looked at a forum post. I haven't looked on.
I think it helps
anything.
Because like, I really don't. I still hear people complaining about, like, oh, you know, all the books from Omni-C suck. I'm like, I don't think so.
Nah, I think
a lot of the really interesting. I think there's like a renaissance with this stuff going on.
It kind of is, like, because Marvel has a lot of good books, and
even DC. DC had one of my like favorite. Two of my favorite books I've read.
DC has all of Morrison's Batman. It has Nick Spencer doing two titles soon. But the Thunder Agent so far has been very impressive. Jeff Lemire, I think, is really doing a nice job on Superboy. I'm really enjoying that. You know, we've got Batwoman coming
up. Oh, and Scott Snyder's Detective I thought was excellent.
I tried to buy that today, but they didn't have it at the shop.
You would love it, actually.
Yeah, I'm interested in getting it, actually.
I'm just saying, like, I kind of walked away. I'm like, you know, even little stuff like Jason Aaron's Wolverine. I didn't think that was going to be great. It was great.
That's one of my favorite books now.
I know. Like, I thought it'd be good. I didn't think it'd be great. I thought it was great. And, yeah, like, Fraction's Thor. People seem to hate this book. I think it's
great.
I think
it's been a long time that there's actually more books that I can't buy that I really want than I could get, because it's like I heard X-23 is really good. I can't afford to open up my pull list any bigger than it is right now.
Yeah, no, there's actually other stuff I would like to get.
Exactly. I want to get that Detective. There's plenty of books I want
to
get.
I hear you. And like, I mean, to kind of like back you up, because like when I read my last DCBS box, there were only, I think I ordered probably like 20, 22 comics. There were only two of them that I didn't really like fully enjoy. Everything else I thought was great.
Yeah, there's only one mainstream comic title that I'm buying that I'm not really digging. And I think you can guess which one that is.
I'm going to agree with you there. And also, Invincible 75, I read. I thought that was terrible.
Well, I don't think that book's very good to begin with. See, that's the point I'm making. Like, everyone will
I love that book, but I haven't gotten that far. So
75
is
terrible.
I used to like it too, but I mean, it's like people say, oh, you know,
hardcover.
Invincible, that's how superhero comics should be done. I'm like, I don't think so.
Nah.
I think like...
Not in the writing.
Not in the writing.
Nah.
Nothing to get you. Otley's a great artist.
The one thing I agree with Joe is it got too... It was doing everything that comics wasn't doing in the beginning, then it jumped right back. It jumped right into the mess with everybody else.
Yeah.
With the character number count, with the starting to get convoluted with stories.
I just have more problems.
Because it was nice and simple. The first 12 issues, I look at that in the highest regard, because I think that's perfect.
Yeah, I think that's actually, like, you're right, that's the thing with Invincible. I think it kicked off, that was its whole point, I thought, was
right.
To show you how comics could be done.
Right.
But yeah, it's just as bad as every other.
But it's like this
crossover gory comic.
But this recent issue is just like, I don't know. I wish just Kirkman would take a step back from all the dialogue he uses in this stuff, because like this issue, it's supposed to be just like big slam bang action, and you've got these great big panels and these punches being thrown and all these splash pages. And to me, that issue probably would have been like really great if it was just a silent issue, except for maybe you had like sound effects and stuff, obviously. But if there was just like very little dialogue, because the artwork's great and you feel like there could be like some really great action and emotion in it, but then Kirkman puts in like four word balloons of dialogue, and it just takes you out of it all. And that was my main problem with it, but I don't know.
All right, Gene, here. This either put a smile on your face or it'll puzzle you, but. All right, here's 12 comics that I read that I really liked. You want to take a guess what these are?
No, go ahead. I want to hear the shock.
Avengers 1 through 6 and New Avengers 1 through 6.
I understand the New Avengers. I want you to explain the Avengers part.
All right, well, Gene, what was your issue with it, though? Just so I can kind of get a glimpse on what you...
One, I was expecting so much more, and especially after the last issue, Siege, I was expecting so much more. And I wanted it to be clear-cut on the team. Like, it didn't seem like... Because we knew Secret Avengers set, the team was set. The Academy set, it was set. But with the Avengers and New Avengers, it seemed too... It was too confusing.
The lineup was confusing? Or
yeah, like the roster. Like, I don't understand why there wasn't a set roster.
All right. I don't know if, like, that's not... See, because I've not really read the Look, this is me jumping into this head first.
Because if that's supposed to be the most important team, I don't know. I felt there should have been more organization when it came to that, at least.
I think, though, thematically, there's a reason for that jumble, I think, the way it reads. I think that that's the whole purpose, to me, of what Bendis is doing with the Avengers right now is he's, especially with these first two arcs, there was something I found that kind of unified them both, was that it was kind of Bendis tackling genres that people claim he can't do. All right, for example, like Avengers 1 through 6, like that's Bendis trying to do Morrison. Like that kind of like, I'm gonna throw all this cosmic stuff, I'm going to throw all these concepts at you one after another, one after another. And well, I don't think he can 100% like succeeds. I think if he did a pretty admirable job of it. I thought the whole feeling of that book, it feels new and energized. It feels like, I don't know, like Bendis has got some new inspiration to kind of do this book. And I really love the Romita Jr. art in it. I don't know what people's problem was with that. I know Al,
it just, that first issue, it just felt like it was rushed to me. And I had reason to kind of believe that because when he did that interview with iFanboy right around the Kick-Ass movie, he was saying that he kind of like started on Avengers like behind. And like I had that in mind, and when I actually looked at it, it just felt like it was rushed, and I don't know, it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't like spot.
There's a couple
a
like
Romita.
Odd like faces here and there, but yeah. Like I thought overall though there's an energy to it. That's what I love about Romita. I think the same stuff I like about his Kick-Ass pages and stuff like that, I feel like I get that same energy.
He captures in a way that similar energy to I think Kirby has.
Yes, yes.
In a lot of his stuff.
And I think that's what Bendis is trying to do. He's trying to channel that Kirby energy for this series.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that first arc was him responding to critics, like through characters saying stuff and like just basically saying like, you're trying to put me in a box and tell me what I can do, but I can do this shit too. Yeah. Like I can mix it up with the best of them. I think that's kind of the whole vibe I got from that book. You could say justifiably or unjustifiably so. He's the poster child for the decompressed story that we've kind of had in mainstream comics for the last, 8 to 10 years. And like to me, I felt like he's doing this arc. He's trying to do that hyper compression. He's trying to fit as much as he can in each issue of this book. So I'm saying like these were all $3.99 comics, but I read them like they took a while to read. It wasn't just because there was a lot of dialogue. It was just, there was a lot going on. There was kind of a lot to go through, a lot to comprehend, and I don't know. I guess some of the time travel stuff can get a little like a little annoying, I guess, after a while, because they keep doing it so often. But I don't know. It felt like a new energized Bendis to me. Like he's re-energized to do the superhero stuff again. And see, I don't know. I enjoyed it. I'm coming at it with fresh eyes. I haven't been reading this thing all along.
I wish I wasn't so harsh on it, because I only read the first issue, and I kind of read that at a point where I was kind of angry about comics. To be fair. But I don't know. I mean, still from my memory of it, I don't remember, being so overjoyous about it. But now, I don't know, hearing you talk about it, I'm interested. Because at some point, I am going to start with, Disassembled in trades. And
I'm
going
to reread all that stuff, too, at some point.
And at some point, I'm looking forward to getting back
to it. So much hype in my head that's what did it for me. Yeah. But I'm really interested in the next arc. I think that's going to be amazing.
Well, did you read number 7?
Yeah, I read half of it.
I thought that like the hood is in there and stuff. Like I feel like maybe some you're gonna start seeing some more of his stuff from his previous work start to dip its way back in.
But. Yeah, no, I think this will be the start of Bendis.
I think he needed to get that arc out of him. Like he needed to show like he can do this stuff. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you might love it. Maybe you think, oh, he can't do that stuff. But I don't know. I thought he pulled it off. And I don't see like what was in that comic that a kid couldn't read. People complain, oh, well, my kids can't read Avengers. What was so bad about that book? Like, granted, it's a lot of dialogue, but. Yeah. I read Chris Claremont when I was a kid. This is less dialogue than that, you know? Like, what was so bad about it? To me, this is... And even had those Next Avengers kids and stuff in it, which I thought was cool. I thought that was kind of another Morrisonian thing. Like, let's take something and, like, make this universe bigger, showing, like, you know, other stuff exists. Like, all this stuff is part of one big story. And I don't know. I liked it, actually, quite a bit. And I was surprised. I thought that was going to be... I was going to walk away hating it, but I loved it. And I'll be reading that book now from now on.
Wow, that is incredible to me that you're reading an Avengers comic.
I'm reading 3 Avengers.
That's fucking nuts. Like from day one, I started talking to you. You were always like, "Boo the Avengers!" And
you know, I like Bendis' Avengers though, because they're not. He's still like he has. Like it's he writes typical. To me. He writes the best Spider-Man. I know you disagree with me on that.
Ultimate, I'll give you that. Maybe right. Not
but
best.
I like him.
But
no, I like
good.
Him in both these books. Like he's. Him and Wolverine are like the coolest characters in like both of these books.
Yeah.
See, to me, in the new Avengers, I think that's Bendis doing trying to do the magic stuff, which I don't think is always in his wheelhouse. And I think he's kind of using that in that story. Like, that's his other kind of going against the grain a bit of what you'd expect, you know, the first arc of this story. Because New Avengers, I guess, is supposed to have a little bit more of, like, that kind of street-level feel to it, I guess, since Luke Cage is heading it. But, you know, the fact they would do a magic story right out of the bat, I thought that was kind of ambitious. That's another thing with this book, too. Like, I think there's a lighter tone to this work than the other New Avengers stuff that I've read. It feels funnier. It feels a lot faster paced. There's a lot going on. It's people say, oh, this kind of fun. This is actually a fun comic to read. Like, I love the banter between, I think the banter is more natural in this book between this cast of characters. And I think
that's why I put it above Avengers, because it's been going this way for a bit. As soon as Stuart Immonen jumped on the book, that's when it really started getting really good. And it's all about that. Like, they can sit around and do nothing. And I know the latest issue is just that, pretty much. And
I like that, great. Though.
I love when they do that. Especially that team, they gel so well together.
I don't know, it's good, I like it. I think Eminem kills it on that book. I'm sad to see he's not, I don't think he's gonna be doing it after.
Yeah, I didn't even realize, like, I saw that, I'm like, okay, that came out of nowhere, because I thought he was gonna be on it for a while, because
it kind
of
makes sense, though.
He wanted to do big runs with everybody. Yeah. Like, he's like, I'm gonna be back to my big runs, because when you look at his, like, you know, his whole resume, like, he has these huge runs with artists, which is great to see in comics.
But not really with the first volume of New Avengers. Like, every arc was a different artist. Like, that's why I kind of think it makes sense. Finch.
Neil, you had a good run on that book, though.
Yeah, it, like, towards the end of it. Like, he was, I think, at, like, overall in the New Avengers, he's probably
how many arcs? Four?
Finch did the first six. McNiven did an arc after Diodato. Yeah. I think McNiven came back for a couple issues. And in that Civil War period, every issue had a different artist.
Frank Cho. And then
Lionel Francis Yu did a little bit of a run. And then Eminem, pretty much.
Yeah, well, no, the Civil War thing was special, though. That was amazingly done, because it was an artist for each character.
That wasn't on purpose. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, it was Chaykin, it was Lil Yu, it was Olivia Coipel.
Brian Hitch was in there too, right. I think. Yeah, I know what you're talking about with that.
But Alex, right, though. I thought, like, Bendis's whole conceit with New Avengers was to change up the art often. So,
no, that's not what he wanted.
I read something about that.
Like, he was influenced by, like, Global Frequency and stuff like that, because it was a different artist for each story. And
that's why I think it would make sense for.
I could have sworn I've read that before, though.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing.
Well, Chaykin is drawing the next issue, so I'm excited about that. But I'm curious to see who they're. I think that's just, like, another one-off. But I'm curious who they're going to do for, like, the next arc or the next, you know, for the foreseeable future. But yeah, I like that they had Victoria Hand in this. Like, I feel like that's. Again, you know, Bendis, I obviously big fan of that, of the Warren Ellis Thunderbolts run, and, like, I like that he's still keeping little remnants of that going in his run. Mm-hmm. And I really like that character too. I thought she mixed it up.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't just throw her in the garbage. Well, that's his character anyway, so I'm you know, I knew they wouldn't do that. So
what else? I liked it. That's all. I'm doing an Alec Berry there. I like
Alec Berry, yeah, cool quote. I liked it. Well,
I'm interested to see where it goes.
I'm glad to hear that you actually are enjoying that, because that makes me even more excited to one day read
all
that
stuff. I feel like, what is the hate for this? Like, why?
It's
kind of
just Bendis. It's weird. I know we've talked about this before,
it's the same
thing
with Morrison too. Like Batman Inc. Fun fucking first issue. Yeah. What's to complain about?
I think it's weird, because we talked about this before. Like, a year ago, we would have been in the other people's position of kind of putting down Bendis, and now we are defending the man. I'm kind of defending the man now. Like, you're defending with his Avengers, and then Scarlet stuff. Like, we've been praising that stuff too. And it seems like most people are kind of down on the guy. Except for, I thought New Avengers was the one book, though, that a lot of people liked.
No, a lot of people seem to like that, but it doesn't stop other people from, you know, complaining about it.
I think it's odd, though. Like, we've kind of, like, reversed roles in a way. I don't know.
Obviously, you have reverse roles of it, because Gene didn't seem as sold on these as I was.
Yeah.
Right. No. I think Bendis, from this point on, has showed us a lot. Like, he had a way better second half of the year than in the beginning, to me, at least.
Yeah.
Because the stuff wasn't hitting with me in the beginning of the year, but now I think he's really rolling.
It's just going to...
And once these first two arcs are out of the way, I think the books are going to get a lot better.
It just makes sense, though, like, that the moment Bendis is kind of receiving, like, more crap than usual is when a Moon Knight book with him is going to come out. So, like, the only chance that Moon Knight really could ever got some, like, praise is probably, like, now going to become, like, oh, Bendis sucks, Moon Knight. It's terrible.
No, I think, though, Bendis was in a bit of a rut for a while. I know he'll never admit it, but I do think, a little creatively, I think he was. It's very, like, to me, that's what I felt in these first issues of these series. It just felt like a clean break. It just felt like I want to do something a little different. I'm kind of, again, I think people, I've noticed there's a lot of creators lately. Like, I think you're just getting tired of being pegged as doing one thing all the time. Like, I think they really, and it's not always, doesn't always work, Secret Avengers. You know, other examples, I think, like this, I think it does. I think he pulled off trying to move into a little bit different genres and stuff like that. And these stories, they're still very identifiably Bendis Avengers comics, but I don't know, they felt a little different. They felt re-energized to me. I don't know, to me anyway. He's been writing these books quite a while, so it's like that's the same thing I felt even coming to the end of Batman and Robin. I did get the feeling a bit like Morrison was like, I just kind of want to get this done and move on to my next thing because it's really exciting.
Yeah.
That's the same feeling I got with Batman Inc. number one, which is that it's new. It's good.
Like, that's what I got.
I think a lot of it is, you know, people, like, they want their writers to branch out and they complain once they're stuck in the same zone. But, you know, once they try it, then they're like, oh, well, they're not what they used to
be. Well, it's like the same. And they, like, people have the same reaction to, like, comic characters that kind of do character, like, creators, like, the characters. They're always, like, bitching when they're, you know, they do this, characters are in the same spot. But the second you bring some change to it, it's just like, what are you doing?
Perfect example, Spider-Man. How many people said they're not going to read Spider-Man, but yet Spider-Man's been the same thing for how long?
Yeah.
When they actually do something different, what, you now you're not going to give it a try? It's like, okay.
Yeah.
But I think I feel like in all of comics, I'm getting that feeling, though. Like, the tide is changing a little bit. I don't think people want to do these really long arcs and stories. Like, I think everybody, I'm getting this feeling in all of, like, mainstream comics. Like, everybody wants to get in and out. They want to keep moving. They want to keep creating. And I love that feeling because that's my favorite work comes from, is where people are just throwing ideas out there and moving as fast as they can. And, like, here's another idea. Here's another. Like, that's the kind of stuff I like to read. And I get in that feeling in a lot of mainstream comics. Like, just that.
I mean, that has more chance of getting you involved as a reader. Like, that was one of the things that Joe Casey brought up in that interview that I really liked. Is comics it's an interactive medium. It's one of the few mediums you can really interact with. And that's the type of work that does it, is that compressed stuff with a ton of ideas on each and every page. Because that requires you to think a little bit more about it. And when you think a little bit more about it, you're obviously interacting with the work. And that's what I love about Morrison's Batman. I think when we start talking about it, I'll really get into it. But, like, his Batman run is such an interactive piece. And, like, I was rereading some of the last couple issues tonight. And just the whole time, my brain is just going. It's firing on all cylinders. Just thinking about all these ideas he's throwing out and relating it back to his other stuff.
Well, how did you, speaking of that, though, well, yeah, how did you dig? Because there was a lot of Morrison Batman books the last month. Like, it kind of just, it's one era is finished, another has begun. So what's your feelings on that? Did you like the way Batman and Robin, wrapped up?
Yeah, I think Batman and Robin had a great conclusion. I think there was, like, a point in that book where I wasn't, like, not liking it. I still thought it was really great, but it did seem like it was having some sort of drag. But that last arc just kind of seemed like, it almost seemed like that last arc was, like, an entirely different book, in a way. Because a lot of Batman and Robin was just kind of these self-contained stories, kind of related back to some previous Morrison stuff. But they, you know, it wasn't like the other Morrison stuff where, like, everything was really, like, self-reflective on each other and all the clues were building and you could feel that in the stories. But with the final arc, the final couple issues, it kind of ditched that whole, like, all right, here's some new, fun, fresh stories without much connection. Let's go back to kind of the Batman RIP mindset where, like, there's all these clues and all these things are different laid out. And it's in those last couple issues of Batman RIP. It's in the last two issues, I think, of Return of Bruce Wayne. I was fun to see all that stuff again because, as I said, the interaction. Like, that's the fun thing I loved about reading Morrison's Batman before, was just all those clues and everything, and you could get into it. And I got that vibe again in his wrap-up of this kind of chunk of his story. And also, too, like, I love the Joker. I really just thought it was cool, like, his game, seeing that, how that concluded. Also, really, too, loved the reveal of Dr. Hurt. You finally kind of figure out who Dr. Hurt is, and I think it's, like, the coolest thing in the world. Because even the Dr. Hurt character, he's kind of like a couple different people in a way. Like, in one way, you can think of him as Thomas Wayne, Bruce Wayne's father, but then another way you can think of him as the Thomas Wayne born from, like, 1640 or whatever, and he's just this immortal guy. And then when you read Return of Bruce Wayne number 6, that stuff builds still, and then you kind of find out it's Darkseid incarnate. that's like trying to work to destroy Bruce Wayne even further in time and also ruining the Wayne family reputation. And it's just like when all that hits you, finally, it's just the coolest feeling. Like, oh my God, that's so cool. And like,
yeah, to see Darkseid work on that level is crazy.
Yeah, and it's just, it's insane. And then it builds more to the point of like Morrison on Batman. It's just, he cannot be beat. Batman's preparing for everything. And it's like, Batman can beat Darkseid incarnate in, you know, the 17th century and like have his mind wiped, and he still knows what the fuck to do. It's crazy. It's absolute insanity. And I love the way all that stuff kind of just collided at the end and it came together. And like, I read Return of Bruce Wayne 6 two times. The first time, I felt like I got some of it, but there were just other things that really kind of ran over my head. I wasn't too clear on it. But when I read it the second time tonight, I just really kind of slowed down with it, really just took my time with it. And it read, I felt like, perfectly clear to me. And it was just cool to see all that stuff. And I thought, too, I mean, I haven't read all of Final Crisis. I've read, like, the first three issues. But that last issue of Return of Bruce Wayne had a very similar vibe to Final Crisis, the way I think that was written, which was kind of cool to go back to. And I think in a way, and obviously it is too, like a perfect end cap to Final Crisis. I think Final Crisis kind of ends in a way in Return of Bruce Wayne number 6. And I think that's fucking awesome. Again, I love the way all his work collides like that. And, oh, it's so fucking good, man. There's no better comic, I think, out right now than Batman, or Morrison's Batman. Like, there's just so much fucking stuff going on. But I want to hear you talk, Joe. What do you think of it?
I kind of wondered if the end of this Batman, Return of Bruce Wayne and Batman and Robin, because like, in Morrison's Talking with Gods in Patrick Meaney's documentary, Morrison talked a lot about how Darkseid in Final Crisis and Dr. Hurt were like reflections of kind of terrorists and Bin
Laden,
like, all this stuff.
Just evil in general.
Yeah. He never believed in that stuff until after 9/11. Like, that there really were people out there that their only goal is just to strike terror in people and destroy. And mm-hmm. I kind of wonder if that is that signaling the end to him, like that we finally gotten past all this. And then just looking at the kind of, I don't say the positivity, but just like the kind of demeanor of Batman Inc. Like, does he feel?
Well, I think in a lot of ways that yes, because there's a lot of mention too. Like, I mean, if you really go back to Batman RIP, Batman dies. Okay, and I think he dies in the way that is a certain Batman that kind of dies. And this journey that he takes through time to come back and everything is kind of, and you see it in Return of Bruce Wayne number 6, where you have like the Batman Year 1 references and like I Will Become a Bat, that famous scene and everything. That is kind of about the rebirth of Batman. It's a new Batman.
Well, that's obvious.
That's the Batman you see in Batman Inc. And I know what you're like saying.
I just mean for Morrison himself. Yeah. Has he overcome that? Is that done in all his work? Is he, because it feels like that's the chapter that opened up from like the middle of New X-Men to now. It's mm-hmm. been that dealing with these outside forces that want to destroy us.
I think that's a question that you could probably answer maybe in a couple years. I mean,
a lot of people would say Batman and Robin feels a lot like that at the beginning, and it gets darker as it goes.
Batman and Robin, if anything, is kind of maybe that last hurdle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like, you know, I think it's, if we're going to assume that, yes, this is kind of the end of that chapter of his beliefs and everything, Batman and Robin is kind of like that, you know, like he's like 80% there on the bright side, like things are looking up, but there's that last sort of thing that he's got to get through.
But I get that feeling, too, when I was reading the Bendis Avengers, too, is that some of, like, even, like, look at that story, look at, like, Secret Invasion through Siege, and look at how that reflects. That's the same thing. So those people coming that are out to destroy us, and there's nothing we can do about it. There's no way we can reason with them. They just want to destroy. And mm-hmm. I feel like him too. Like he's almost getting past that. And he's looking towards more optimistic things. And, there's a feeling I got too when I with Nick Spencer stuff, which we'll get to later. Just like that feeling of dealing with this stuff and kind of just moving past it.
Yeah.
And I felt that very much at the end of Batman and Robin.
I think you're safe in making that assumption. And I think that last page of Return number 6 kind of sells that. That last shot where you have the Justice League and he's saying, I have help. Like that last thing, like pretty much one of the last things from Bruce's narrative.
I got the line down. He goes, the first truth of Batman, the saving grace. I was never alone. I had help.
Yeah.
I think you are.
I think you're justified in making that assertion. I think it's kind of backed up. I think you've got the proof there.
But again, I'm just kind of wondering in a whole in comics if we're entering that next stage.
But like, even when the stories were, you know, a little dark, you know, they infused characters like Damian who was the, even though he's a little brooding sometimes, he is that light. between all those characters, you know? Mm-hmm. He respects the mantle. He looks up to all of them. He respects all of them. He's not the... He's not just the I don't care type character, you know?
Well, he's like Batman. He just sees the mission. Yeah. He knows the objective.
No, I think he's more than... That's what I'm saying. No, I think he's more than that. I think he's the heart. I don't think he's like Batman at all. All
right.
He cares about Pennyworth. He cares about Dick and, you know, and he respects Bruce, even though he doesn't respect him to his face a lot of the time. But when he wasn't around, he was always saying, well, my dad could do this and he's like that. And, you know, he was pressuring Dick to live up to that mantle. I think he's the light. I don't think he's the dark.
I didn't say he was the dark. I'm just saying his half of his worldview, I think, though, is similar to Batman. I think he sees through a lot of the bullshit. I think he has a very clear path, I think, in his mind anyway, of where he needs to go. But you are right, there is a bit of a muddling of that towards the end of Batman and Robin, like where he's unsure, like, you know, if Bruce comes back, we won't get to be Batman. I remember that page, you know, in the book, we won't get to be Batman and Robin anymore. I think you might be right. I think there's more of a heart there. But
as for your question of like whether comics as a whole is moving on,
I think are we done with that post-authority era? Like, are we done trying to imitate those comics? Are we looking towards a new thing? I think we are.
I could see it. I mean, it is kind of reflected in a lot of... I mean, just take a look at some of the, like, mainstream banners. Heroic Age, Brightest Day, what Morrison's got going on. Like, there is some sort of evidence that that might be the possibility. But again, I don't think you can necessarily say it.
Banners. Fuck the banners. I'm just talking what I'm reading in the comics. Like, I'm getting that feeling again of people... Uncanny X-Force, I get that feeling too. Like, it just... I think we're done. Like, we're starting to move to what, like, Frank Miller was showing and, like, Dark Knight Strikes Again. Like that. Well, comics can still be dark. We can still have serious stuff, but it could also be, like, wacky and crazy. And, like, I don't know. I'm getting that feeling in a lot of stuff now. And I'm happy to see it.
I can see. Yeah. I feel it too.
Oh, Gene, but what was your opinion at the end of Batman and Robin? I remember you telling me. I don't know if you want to say it again.
Oh, yeah, sure. I just, it's great to see, you know, seeing how they interact with Bruce back and. I swear I could have used the whole issue of him just talking to Dick and Damian, you know, just catching up. But I guess that's what those one-shots were for. I kind of give DC credit because they make me kind of want to go read those, because especially with how the return was. But I love the whole announcement of the, you know, the way he went about announcing the Batman Inc. I think that's, you know, those are the two or three of the best pages all year that I've read, because I love how he went about it. Because I'm like, how does he get from here to there? And he did it in 3 pages. Yeah, usually it would take half a year for a lot of, you know, writers or even a company, you know, to get there. And I was glad he was able to do that his way, and he did it in 3 pages. And I'm like, that shows you how good of a writer he is when he could just do something like that in that short amount of time.
But it makes complete sense, too.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
The other thing I think that was cool is, like, the thing I like that Morrison does, like, he'll look at these characters, kind of, and just, like, say, you know, what's the thing that makes sense? It makes sense that Batman would do that, like, and but nobody's done anything, or like had the balls to go and say, you know, he's going to start like an international organization, like that dude, how the way he feels about like the war on crime and everything. Why wouldn't he do that?
Yeah,
well, you know, stop it before it gets to a city.
Yeah, like, granted, it could lead bad places, and who knows? We'll see if the story goes that way. But I don't think it really is.
Nah.
I don't think that's the point of this whole thing. But I'm just saying, like, to me, I'm like, that made perfect sense. Why did nobody ever think of this before?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's like the same feeling. It's like, why has this not been done before? But, yeah, I mean, like, I when I read Batman Inc. number 1, I kind of got the similar... I got kind of the similar feeling to when I read Batman and Robin number 1, just that kind of light pace. Like, this is a lot of fun. This is just going to go off and just be balls to the walls fun. But I think it's even more to the point with Inc. I think it is just kind of supposed to be this sexy sort of like globe-trotting adventure book. It's kind of the vibe I get for it. And I just really kind of liked, especially like I liked the last like 2 pages of it where you kind of have the narration like, well, it's like, it's pretty much like, it's like that episode of Ren and Stimpy where it's just like, this, will Batman be able to stop the bomb before it goes off? Will Catwoman lose her clothes? Tune in next time to see.
Well, that's the TV show, man. Batman TV show.
And I like that. I thought that was cool. Yeah, I thought that added a lot of like tone. I thought it added a lot of tone to what the series is going to be.
I actually really like the return.
I want you guys to talk about that first.
I know a lot of people didn't dig it, but that felt like a nice long read.
Yeah.
Like, I sat and read that for a long time, and there was actually back matter that was actually very interesting in it. It wasn't just stuff from like, I don't really give a shit about this.
I agree with you. I think the return... I mean, it sets up a lot of stuff for what's going to be coming up, but it did kind of seem, again, like another little bit of a palate cleanser. Just like kind of officially saying like that Bruce Wayne's back. This is what he's up to.
I was surprised how many people skipped it. Because I've read people like, I didn't get that. It's
to
like,
me, it was great because it brought up a million question marks in my head. Like, what is Bruce's big picture for the Bat family? You know, like, he's hinted at, like, I know the big picture, I know it. But I'm like, and I'm looking back in the books, I'm like, did I miss it? But clearly he didn't, you know, we're going to go along the journey and see what it is.
What do you think of this Leviathan threat in here?
Thought that actually ties in nicely with what I brought up before about the threats. Like, here, Batman is going to actually go and deal with these.
That's what I was meaning.
Yeah, like, I didn't even put that together until I just, like, looked at the book right now.
And it's just, like, I mean, I hate to kind of stereotype, but, like, the kind of people he's fighting are wearing, like, turbans and Middle Eastern in it. You know what I mean? It did really kind of give off that vibe that Batman's fighting terrorists in this comic book.
But he's doing it in a fun way.
You're reading it, and it's just like, this is so cool. You're not, like, scared.
But he's doing it in such a comic book-y way that you don't think about it that way, unless you really want to think, you know, we should really want to look at it that way.
That's how I did.
And I think that's the right way to do it.
But the thing I loved about, especially these characters, it's like I feel like I need to go back and reread everything because I care about these characters now. I think it's great that Dick already had his costume ready. Like, it wasn't a big deal that he, you know, like, he didn't want to show it was a big deal that he was losing the mantle of being Batman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had his Nightwing costume ready and ready to go, while Damian was just like, you felt like he was just waiting to hear what was going to be happening to him next.
What did you think of the Morrison script pages in the backup?
It was interesting to get even a slight glimpse at, you know, his process. So I'm always, he's one of the few, like, a lot of writers, I don't give a shit if they push, but his stuff I'll read. Because it's not like we got a lot of extra insight into it, but it was interesting to look how David Finch interpreted certain pages and see if he pulled them off or not. There's one or two here where I don't think he really sold what Morrison wanted him to, but I didn't hate the art. I thought the art was suitable to some of it.
It was okay. I thought the coloring was more off than anything.
Well, at some point you can't even see what's happening because his pencils are so dark, the ink is so dark, and the colors are just black.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, like that. I don't think that was the way some of this was supposed to look.
I think a good, like, example too, like when you read the Morrison script for the page where Batman is diving off the roof of that tower and he's tackling that guy. Like, Morrison writes for that panel, like, where he first jumped off, it's just, like, make sure you feel the impact in this panel. And, like, I don't feel the impact at all in that panel.
Yeah.
Because, like, Batman and the guy are so small, they're so far off in the distance, and it's just, like, that should be a more close-up shot. There should be more power there. And, I don't know, I just thought the coloring was weird in the page when the guy lands on, like, the inflatable balloon and the helicopter's on fire. And Batman's, like, orange, the background. Like, I don't know, the coloring, it's not, like, orange because that's the inflatable bag. That should be orange. But, like, I don't know.
The Planet Gotham page?
No. Like, the page where the inflatable balloon is after he tackles the guy off the tower. The inflatable balloon's coming down and all this shit. And it's, like, it's got, like, a bunch of small panels and he's talking to the dude and he says, like, you're next and all the smoke comes up. I think the coloring is really weird on this page.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're talking about. Yeah,
the coloring is just, I don't know how to describe it, but it's really off.
It looks a little like Scotty Young's, like,
it kind of, like, but it just doesn't fit. It doesn't fit David Finch, you know?
Quick question. I want you guys to, explain to me why you think Bruce took Damian on that trip.
That's interesting.
Because I'm like, to me, clearly, I know Bruce knows Damian, him and Damian can't work together, so I'm like, what was the reasoning behind that?
I think that was more of that was actually one of the nice little character moments, I think, actually. I think he wanted to just take an adventure with his son.
Okay.
Like, just see what it was like. He's been gone. Like, we have an excuse to go out and do, this is what we do.
Plus,
this
in a way,
it's like a father-son fishing trip.
And in a way, like, it's kind of, I think Damian is Robin kind of, like, showing what he has learned to Bruce. Because, like, Bruce has been away for so long, and, you know, he knows that Damian has been working with Dick as Batman and Robin. I think that's kind of a scene, too, to, like, just see, like, for sure.
I think it's a double thing. I think it's to see, it's to make sure that, you know, he and him cannot be Batman and Robin. But I think it's also just a catch-up. Just, I want to see my son. I want to see what he's, like what Alex said, see what he's accomplished. Let's spend some time. This is how we bond.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we do.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually kind of a nice page if you look at it in that light, actually.
There's a lot of payoff kind of in that scene, but yeah, I don't know. Morrison's Batman.
See, that's what I say, like, people say, like,
awesome.
Oh, Morrison's, like, he doesn't write characters well. Like, there's no emotion. I don't agree with any of that. I think he does all that stuff. I think he does action well. I think he does the emotional stuff well. I think he does the bigger picture, you know, subtext stuff well, you know? It's like, I don't know, what else could you want? To me, this is what everybody should want from their superhero books. This is not, you know, this shouldn't be the exception.
But, you know, I did like some of the points where, especially when Damian quit, it's like, I've worked with my dad for years. I'm like, if you've ever worked with a parent or a relative who's like that, you know, who's very hard on you when you work for them, like, you could clearly see, you can clearly understand why Daniel quit on the spot like that. But that was good.
So Batman Inc., though, whatever you think of the art, I thought the art was great.
Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I should have known this was going to happen, but, like, yeah, Yannick McKettigas is only doing the first, like, 3 or 4 issues.
Mm-hmm.
I thought for some reason I had a feeling I thought he would have been like through the whole way, but I guess not. I don't know. Burnham's doing the next one, so I'm not.
Yeah, I can't wait for Burnham to come on. Not to say that I don't enjoy Paquette, because I really like his style for this. And I think
he was the perfect artist for this arc.
That's what I was just gonna say because of the Japanese thing.
Depending where they go,
yeah.
The Japanese thing, like he's perfect.
I don't know if any
of
you guys have never read like any of the Bat manga stuff or anything, right?
Yeah.
You have?
No. I was saying.
Okay.
I know what you mean.
I was saying, like, I think he actually brings a lot of the feeling of that to this book,
mm-hmm.
But while giving it its own style and making it, you know, more palatable, I guess, to an American audience. But I think he brings a really unique thing to this that I don't think other artists really would have. I think he was definitely the right choice for this.
I agree with you.
And I love the. This is what I love about Bob Morrison's stuff, especially when he deals with international things. I love how much identity he gives to all of these little towns. These little gangs, these little heroes and stuff like that you've never heard of, but they feel so real. They feel like these characters that were in books all the time, and Batman is just teaming up with them. And this villain in this book is actually from that Bat manga book, the Lord Deathman.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see that he's even drawing from that stuff as well. But yeah, I don't know, I liked it. I thought this was a great first issue. I don't see what could a kid not read about in this book. What was bad about it?
The couple ass shots for Catwoman, maybe. But you know what? I mean, come on. Like, yeah. I guess if you're like 9 years old, there's nothing wrong with that.
There was plenty of ass. Our Adams drew comics when I was younger. It's like, it's not like this is.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I don't know. If you sense a theme, I'm trying to, you know. I just don't get it. I don't see what's wrong with any of these, like a lot of these comics. Why can't kids read any of these? What's like? I don't really, still don't see what the big deal is.
Want to go back to that Darwin Cook conversation?
Yeah, I don't want to. So let's just move on.
But I guess we're all in agreement that Morrison's Batman is pretty fucking awesome.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The Bat line is actually pretty damn good. Actually.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading these Tony Daniel issues I picked up. But
Scott Snyder, I can vouch though. That's great. I'm going to talk about that the next time we
all right.
do a show because I want to let a few issues pile up. But I like what he's doing. I think it's It has some of the same energy and feeling as Batman Inc., but it's a little bit more of the, you know, just a straight-up detective vibe.
Did you read the Batwoman Zero?
Yes, I did.
You want to talk about that? Because I read that.
I don't know what's really talk about. It was kind of a Zero issue.
The only thing I think that was kind of cool about it was the way... Like, I think the Rucka stuff was just kind of like, all right, look at this character. She's different. Here's a story I'm telling. But I think in this one, like, Williams, along with the other writer he's paid up,
Hayden Blackman,
they kind of say, like, I think with the way, Bruce Wayne, or, you know, I think it is supposed to be Bruce Wayne, is kind of, like, pretty much narrating for her most of the time. It's kind of in a way, like, saying, like, okay, she's, like, for real. She's a real, like, she's part of the Bat family now. That's kind of the feeling I got when I got done reading this. It's like, she's a part of the Batwoman. She's official. She's not just some sort of, like, character that was just in some one story. You know, this is her series now.
I heard people
now.
Complaining about that. Oh, Batman showed up in it. It's like, it's a Bat book.
Yeah, it was cool,
like,
I thought.
I like that, because to me, like, what you're saying, it shows that, you know, it's part of this whole thing.
It shows it matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that, it wouldn't, if it's good, it's good. You know, I like the Batwoman stuff from before, but I don't see what the big deal is about that. I'm like, so Batman showed up, and he's gonna include her in this in some way. Why is that so bad? It's like, why set it in the Bat universe if you can't use any of the Bat characters?
Exactly.
You know, like, I don't get that.
And it
People
makes sense.
People about Gotham Central. Oh, why did Batman have to show up? I'm like, isn't that the point of the book? It's in Gotham City. If Batman doesn't show up, what the hell is the point of setting it in Gotham?
And it makes sense, again. Like, if Bruce Wayne exists in the world and somebody is running around with his symbol, I mean, is he not going to investigate? Yeah, of course he's going to check it out at some
point. Not to mention he's met her before.
Yeah.
And the other story. So it's set up almost for this. So.
And the Kane family kind of has some sort of stake in Gotham City too, right? I believe. Yeah. So, I mean, it makes sense. But yeah, I mean, artwork, of course, is spectacular.
You know, I actually think the Amy Reeder stuff has actually complemented it really nicely, which I knew it would.
Yeah.
Actually, she draws in a similar style to the way he drew some of the flashback pages.
Mm-hmm.
In was it the Elegy? Or the second arc?
Second arc, yep.
So, like, I don't know. I thought it fit nicely. I'm really looking forward to that, and... the writing was fine, yeah. So I don't really care anyway. I just read it for the art, but if the story can be good on top of that, that's always a plus. But yeah, I liked it. Like I said, it's another book. I think the Bat Line is, you know, I still haven't read this David Finch book yet, so we'll see how that
goes. It's not out yet, but yeah.
Not out yet. I mean, like, so far, everything I've read from the new line of the Bat Universe, everything seems like it has a purpose to me anyway. It doesn't feel like they're just throwing
exactly.
a bunch of shit books out there, so.
Cool. What else do we have on our plates?
Should we stick in the DC?
Quick question. Where is the second arc of Batwoman? Like, I haven't seen
it. It's in that one book. That's the whole thing.
I thought Jock did some Batwoman.
He did three issues, but they're
that's not worth reading.
Oh, okay.
They're not worth reading.
So he didn't even finish it, anyway.
Everything that's in Elegy is everything that J.H. did.
Yep, that's okay, yeah, that's it. If you know, where, you know, if you really want to check those issues out, they're not terrible, but, you know, I find them in a 50 cent bin and just check them out. But
okay, no, I thought there was more that J.H.
Nope,
did.
Nope, that's it. That's the entire...
Yep, that's it. It's all you want, really. So, yeah, if you want to stick on the DC thing, we can. I think I know right, where you're going.
I read Thunder Ages number 1 by Nick Spencer and Cafu. I know you've also read this, Alec.
Yep.
I love this book.
I told you. Yeah. Yeah, I'm so excited to hear that.
And,
so excited to hear that.
I think, yeah, Nick Spencer he's got my I'll buy anything he does.
Yep. Between that and Morning Glories, that guy is going
to
get all my
this
money.
This has so much to do with Morning Glories, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, Nick Spencer now, I think he's kind of formed what he wants to be as a writer. And, like, I noticed, and it ties into what I was talking about with that, like, moving into the next stage in comic, the next decade, whatever you want to say. I noticed with both this and Morning Glories, there's this, the way he writes with, like, this, there's always this feeling of dread or something, like, something.
Just this sense that there's something yeah. above your power that you can't control.
Yeah, but. There's so much excitement and fun going on at the same time. And
that you're not that afraid.
That's such a weird thing to balance. I'm like, yeah. That takes skill.
It's perfectly done in Morning Glories because you have these kids trapped in the school and, like, their lives are kind of in, like, danger and they've been, like, almost killed in one issue. But yet they always, like, sliding these, like, lines of dialogue, like, where a dude was commenting
like
on...
Both this book and that book are about these dark organizations which
yeah.
are paving the way for the future.
Exactly.
But have all these dark secrets, like, lying underneath and... Now, Nick Spencer's a guy that worked in politics for a while before this.
It makes sense.
And I'm wondering if, with the current state of the world and everything, you know, USA, you know, specifically, like how, you know, corporations and the government, like, they're these oppressive forces and they do more bad than good in the end. But since he's a guy that worked in government, I'm wondering if he tried to go up against that at one point and just kind of found that you can't really do anything with it. So you might as well just, like, find things to enjoy while you can while working in this system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the feeling I get when I read all of his work. Like, yeah. He's kind of preparing, like, trying to prepare us to get through what's coming,
yeah.
almost.
That's why I'm really excited now for Iron Man 2.0 and, like, him writing
yeah,
War Machine.
That feeds into this, too.
It's going to work right with that, yeah. It's going to go right. I mean, you could really... It's the guy is kind of doing that similar vibe of, like, you know, what Morrison does with all his work. Everything kind of has
yeah, this
theme.
This feels... I know you guys never read The Invisibles, but he's the only... I'm going to say this is a high honor. He's the only writer, I think, that I've read that really gets what he was doing and is following up on the ideas and stuff that were in that book.
Mm.
That's a high compliment coming from me.
Yeah.
Because when I read his book, like, he's the only other guy that has that. Fraction has it sometimes. I think Remender has it a little bit. But he's the only guy full on where I get that energy and feeling of, like, a Morrison comic when I'm reading it.
Yeah.
But he has that dialogue of Bendis, too, on top of it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a winning combination.
He's just I get that same feeling, man. Like, I read Thunder Agents. It was like, did Morrison write this? Like, I kind of checked the cover. Because he has that very similar feel.
It still feels like a unique thing, though.
And like you said, because of the dialogue. He's so good with that dialogue, and he's so good at kind of selling his characters with a few lines of dialogue. The sales agent in Thunder Agents, the guy with the long black hair, I forget his name. You automatically just, like, in that first page of issue one, you kind of get who that guy is and what he's about. The chick that's working with him, you get that feel for him, too. Morning Glories, a lot of those kids, you get... you know, what they're kind of about and where they're coming from. And he's great with that. It's setting up those characters.
Well, he has dialogue that sometimes, like, I do this with Bendis a lot and Morrison and Matt Fraction. Like, I like to sit and sometimes just read the dialogue out because it has this certain rhythm to it that's once you get into it, it makes the comic that much more fun to read at that pace. And like, if you read all his stuff, like it moves so quick, and his pacing, the pacing of this comic is great.
Oh, it's amazing.
Did you guys go into this book knowing anything about the comic?
No,
that was another thing he pulled up. Yeah, that was another. Like, I read that first issue, and for the most part, I actually didn't have a sense of, like, I didn't really know what this was about and where this was going to go, but. He writes it in a way that at the end it all kind of came together, and it's just kind of, you get to that point and it's just like, man, it's cool. Again, kind of another Morrison thing. Like, the thing I have with Morrison is while you're reading it, all these ideas are being thrown at you and you don't necessarily know how this all fits, but at a certain point it all kind of clicks, and it's just, when you get to that, it's just a cool thing. And I had that with Thunder Agents number one. But I want to ask you, Joe, do you think this is kind of similar to Fraction's Order in a way? Do you feel like the similarity there? Because I
think it's better than the Order so far already.
Yeah.
And I like the Order quite a bit. But yeah, I think that's what I mean. Like, that's my problem with a lot of Fraction's stuff. And I feel like this is what he wants to do, and he just can't do it. He just can't. I don't know. There's something. I don't know if he feels like he has to tone himself down a bit or something when he writes some of the Marvel stuff. And there's one book I'll mention later which I think you get full Fraction in a Marvel book, but the Order, I don't know, it does feel slightly compromised.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean. I don't know what you mean. It doesn't feel like unleashed Fraction. Like, when I read the Nick Spencer stuff, it just feels the same as Morning Glory. It's like, I don't feel like he's changing anything about himself. Like, this is just the way he writes, and that's just what he's going to do. And
exactly.
This is exactly what he wants to write.
Exactly. Because in the Order, I mean, you do get that feel, like you said, compromise, because he has to deal with kind of the happenings in the Marvel U, the Initiative, and then on top of that, the book was going to get canceled in the end. And there is, like, a lot of... Yeah, I can definitely...
But it seems like Spencer is really impressive, though, because this was his first work for DC
book.
Or Marvel, right?
Yeah, first... Well, and, Jimmy, like, Jimmy Olsen came first, but...
Well, what came first?
Well, Thunder Agents was developed first, but Jimmy Olsen was published first.
Okay,
so
okay.
It's a weird thing.
I haven't read that, but I've heard that the Jimmy Olsen thing is really good, too. But it seems like a lot of... I know me, you, and Gene have talked about this quite a bit. Like, some of the group of the guys that have been coming into Marvel and stuff, coming from it, like Fraction and Hickman. Like, I feel like they've had some difficulty out of the gate trying to get into the vibe of writing these books.
Spencer doesn't have that.
Yeah, not at all. Like, he's, and Scott Snyder too, I'll throw in that category too. Like, these guys just came in and they're already, like, hitting the ground running already.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm so interested in what both this and, you know, and Detective, like, I'm so interested in what's coming next. And, like, I don't know, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm so excited for this book, which is a DC comic about some, like, licensed property that they had. Like,
yeah.
He can do that. Like, I remember when this book was announced, I didn't give a shit.
I didn't either, man.
Now it's, like, one of my top five books that I'm reading right now.
Yeah.
So,
it's fucking
this
awesome.
Has become the I Love Nick Spencer podcast.
It really has, man. It really has. And it's just like, God.
That should show. Like, and I'm not a guy, like, I don't usually, you guys have known me quite a while. I don't just gush over people from reading one issue.
Nah.
They have to really impress me, and this really impressed me. Yeah. This was great stuff.
I'm right
and
there
it's,
with
it's,
you.
Like I said, it's fun, but it's not stupid. And it has a brain. It has stuff to say. It's everything you want in these kind of books. This is exactly, like, Gene, I know, you know, when a trade comes out or something, pick this up, because I think you'll dig it a lot, too.
Okay, that's one.
But more, have you guys aren't caught up on Morning Glories yet, though, right?
I'm up to four. I've read up to four.
Well, that book's, like, you know, again, a very similar feeling, but I had to point out, just because the same character that made that mention of the Invisibles in the first issue?
Yeah.
Guess what he mentioned in issue four?
What's that, the Invisibles?
Nope, Blade Runner.
Oh, that's right. I remember that because when I read that,
like, you know,
yeah.
The only thing I missed is there was a screening of
the screening
final
of
Blade Runner, and
yeah.
I had to miss it. That was all I was thinking about. As I was going,
I
was like,
remember
oh my god,
that.
It's like they got me in this comic or whatever.
I remember reading that, and I was like, "Yep, Joe's really gonna like this scene."
See, Nick Spencer again, winning my heart more and more each issue.
Yeah, I read that like a month or two ago, so I kind of forgot. But yeah, now that you mentioned, I remember that scene and bringing that up. But yeah, man, there's like a certain feel around Nick Spencer too that is just kind of refreshing that I get. Like when I just see him like talking, or when I read one of his comics, there's just sort of this feel that, like, you can really feel like he is some fresh blood.
You feel like he wants to be there.
Yeah, and you can tell he's excited. You can feel that he's excited about what he's doing, and I really just like that. I like reading books by a guy like that. So, yeah, man, Thunder. I'm glad to hear you like that book. I'm glad to hear you're behind it. It's fucking excellent. The second issue is great as well.
That's what I was going to ask you. Is it going to be like, oh, the second issue sucks?
Nah, the second issue, the second issue continues it just as well. It's the same vibe. It's So I'll be sending that to you in the mail.
But now, but I ordered Nick Spencer Supergirl, I'll give it a shot. Now I am fucking super excited.
Iron Man 2.0,
and
as I said.
Infinite Vacation and Iron Man, I've ordered all this stuff. So
I'm ordering it all too, man. This is a guy that I'm really interested in just watching develop over the next couple years.
Even if he fucking fails on something, I have a feeling it's going to be a spectacular failure.
Yeah, it's going to be fucking cool. he's going to go out doing something cool.
Yeah, because he's just doing a lot. Interesting stuff, so yeah.
Well, yeah, I said, man, anybody listening, this is the guy to watch, I think, in the next couple years. This is the guy that I think he's bringing a lot, I think, to comics, and I think it's going to be cool to see him develop as a writer and to see what he is just going to put out in the world in the next couple years. What else do we have to talk about?
I'm looking through the pile.
You want to do Wolverine best there is?
Yeah, sure.
Because I'm excited to talk about this, actually.
Excited good or excited bad?
Just excited interesting. Excited
boy,
interesting.
It's his boy, Charlie.
Well, he's my boy in a sense for at least one comic story, but I don't know. Enjoy is the wrong word. The thing I really found interesting about reading this was, for the longest time, I just kind of thought I had on these sort of rose-colored glasses for Charlie Houston, because I have the reputation of loving his Moon Knight stuff. I don't know, maybe it really was terrible, but I wasn't looking at it that way, and I was kind of making exceptions for it to be good. But I read the bottom just another, a couple weeks ago, I reread it again, and I still really like that story. I still really think it's pretty well written in most cases. I can see more of the flaws now, but I still think overall it's got a lot of nice writing to offer. But then I read this, and I finally kind of see that, I don't want to say bad Charlie Houston, but that questionable Charlie Houston that I think a lot of people kind of know him as. Because this Wolverine comic, I think some of its ideas actually reflect a lot of what the Moon Knight stuff was. I can see the ties there and the themes of just realizing who you really are and having to live with that. That was a big theme in the Moon Knight stuff, and it seems like that's what he's going to be doing here in the Wolverine. But the writing between those two things, I think, is very different, because here I do not think it was written all that very well. I think overall, and I know, Joe, you're going to use this phrase, an interesting failure. I think it's right there in that category, because I kind of like the approach and some of the ideas he's throwing out, but to me it was the pacing that I really kind of took me out of it, and some of his dialogue kind of didn't really fit
with
me.
Well, here's the thing I don't get. Chad Nevitt brought this up in his review of the comic. Why isn't this just a Max book? Why is this... Why do they have parental advisory, not for kids, on the cover? They make a point about how gory it is, not for kids it is, but then you open up the book, and pretty soon the first 5 pages are blanked out curse words.
Yeah.
And second of all, if it's not a Max book, why write the comic this way?
Exactly.
You can't even read half the pages.
No, you can't.
This was I gave Charlie Houston's Deathlok a chance, last year. That was also not a Max book, but was written the same way. Not quite as bad as this. This one is actually a little bit better than how that one was written from that point of view, if you could believe it. literally in the Deathlok, you got halfway through the issue and you couldn't make out a sentence. And I thought, maybe he was making a point, a RoboCop kind of point out of that, about the censorship. But I'm like, after a while, I'm like, no way in hell, because then you just can't read this. It's just there's nothing to read. And I was I was kind of really excited about this book before it came out, because I do like Juan Jose Rip's art, and I do like Charlie Houston. I always try and give him a shot. I read an interview with him, and he was talking a lot about some of his influences for this. I know he mentioned the Morrison Batman. He was trying to take some approaches to do that, and I could see some of that in here. But It's like his writing style is almost like when we were talking about earlier, stuck between those ages.
Yeah.
It's like his idea of a cool comic is looked at a Brad Meltzer comic or something. It's like, oh, that's the height of what we can do. Very, very, everything has to be very vulgar and very gory. That's the only way a comic can be kind of taken seriously.
But I don't get that. I didn't get that vibe in the Moon Knight story, because it's gory and you do have some sort of lewd stuff, but it fits that story. You know what I mean? It fits that what
well,
he.
Moon Knight
what approach,
is probably the best actually of the three. Of
that's
them.
His best comic yeah. stuff. That it's easily his best comic stuff. But
yeah. I'm just saying, like, but do you get that vibe when you read this? Like,
yeah.
a lot of his ideas and stuff seem closer to the camp of comics we're talking about. Like I think he. Wants
it really
to
seems like a book that kind of belongs in the 90s.
In our early 2000s.
Early
2000s,
you know, 90s.
90s, yeah.
Yeah. It really.
Like, this is a comic. Like, if I read this when I was a kid, I'd be, well, that was the best comic I ever read. Because it's just gory and there's cursing and there's. But it's just. I don't know. But there's enough here that I like, though.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I actually like the way he writes Wolverine. I actually do think there is a couple of interesting things going on here, but I don't know if I can go on. And I do like the art, actually. I like how. I would always get worried when a penciler I like from, you know, joins Marvel, because sometimes they'll throw their coloring and their inkers on it and it won't even resemble their work anymore. But he's maintained something. Like, a lot of his work is still... And he's probably the perfect choice for this book.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, something about this just did not... I don't know, it didn't work for me, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to keep going with it.
Well, no, just because of, again, like, the thematic similarities between the Moon Knight stuff and this, I kind of want to keep going just for that. I kind of think that's a little interesting. I don't know, just that way it's written, and I agree with you. Like, reading... There were voiceover, you know, boxes or whatever you want to call them, that I had to read, like, two or three times to understand what the fuck he was trying
to
say. Yeah, and it just seemed really out of place.
Like, that's the same thing, too. Like I feel like he's just putting voiceover boxes there because he's expected to, because he read Dark Knight Returns, and, oh, that must be how every comic
yeah.
has to read.
But again,
like,
I think that...
Great, but it's
that,
like, that's,
yeah.
you know...
That stuff works for me in the Moon Knight story. That stuff
well, see,
works
the Moon
me.
Knight one makes sense, though, because Moon Knight is always put in that box that he's Marvel's Batman and stuff, and you can make an argument maybe Charlie Houston is playing with that a little bit
mm-hmm.
when writing the story. And like, this, I don't know. This just nah. seems like that's
that was what he needs
he
to do.
He thinks it's supposed to be written, so he's just writing things that way.
Exactly. I agree with you.
I know. But I'm not like, oh, I'm sorry I read this or anything.
Nah,
like,
it was
I had
interesting.
Fun with it
was like, interesting, yeah.
Like I said, though, like, that's why I told you pick it up. I didn't tell you it was good. I just said, I think we can have an interesting conversation about it. Because, I don't know, Charlie Houston is almost one of those guys, like, I keep hoping he knocks one of these out of the park, but it hasn't happened. Because I like his other work, and I've read enough interviews that he seems like a nice enough guy. He seems like he has some good ideas, but I don't know. I don't know. Especially, the thing that still boggles my mind, though, is that why isn't this just Wolverine Max?
Yeah. I think you make a good point there.
Who else is this comic for, other than, like, that audience?
You think they're going to try to double dip on this if it takes off to the point where, like, oh, now we have the uncut version? Remember, it wasn't too long ago that Frank Cho got into the same, you know, similar situation with the book he was drawing. The Marvel, the Sheena, was it the Sheena?
Oh, yeah.
And he had to censor it a lot, and then he was like, he still had the originals, and was saying if Marvel was ever interested in doing the, you know, a different version of it, he would be able to produce it.
Well, there's no set, like, the art is exactly the same, so they basically just have to re-letter the whole thing, but
okay.
I don't really see anybody clamoring for that.
No.
I don't know, they've done black and white variants of, you know, of issues and things like that.
No,
so
I don't see this lasting
that's
out.
That's not gonna happen. Yeah, this thing is not gonna, it's not gonna sell that well, there's not gonna be interest in it. It's, you know, like the fifth Wolverine book to be published, and yeah. I don't know. I mean,
also, it's the book itself and content seems redundant, because, like, it seems like he's treading some of the same ground that Jason Aaron's doing much better in the regular Wolverine.
Plus, it's kind of just like, I don't know, it's not that original of a story. Like, Wolverine just dealing with the fact that he's, like, that really this just, like, lewd, almost, like, monster killer. You know, he's a murderer on the inside. Like, I think that's been done before. You know, it's not really that much of an original story. But I don't know. It was interesting enough to read. I kind of want to keep going with it, but I doubt it.
Do you think they could have fit this all in a one shot and it would have came out better?
Well, this is an ongoing, so I don't know.
If you took the idea and Houston wasn't writing it, yeah, it could make a good one shot.
no,
I mean, again, I love the guy and I love that Moon Knight stuff, but I don't think he could pull off a one shot.
No, because I think Wolverine is the best one shot character in all of comics. Like, if you're gonna write a one shot, Wolverine is the character to use, because I don't know, they come out really well. Like, I have a ton of Wolverine.
Well, he's such an archetype, that's why.
Right.
But And him and
Batman, they make the best one-shots.
No, but Wolverine's a great art book, in my opinion, for that very reason. It's like, that's why there were so many of those one-shots where they got, like, all these Italian artists and Spanish artists to come in. Because it's like, you can make such a simple story, but you can do a lot with the visuals. That's why, like, Raphael Grandpa's Wolverine story in Strange Tales was so excellent. Because the story in that is actually great. He actually plays on something.
That's Strange Tales too?
Yes. Okay. That's actually one of my favorite comics this year, was just that Raphael Grandpa story.
I actually reread that tonight, if you want to talk about it some more.
Yeah, go ahead. That's a great Wolverine comic.
Well, did you kind of get a meta vibe reading it? Like, kind of like a comment on, I don't know, how kind of mainstream superheroes are a little bit obsessed with, like, the action and everything. I mean, that's kind of symbolized with them fighting in a ring and a lot of, like, you know, the point of, like, Wolverine, like, the only reason you do this is because you're so addicted to the violence. But there's also that scene, too, where they go to, like, the commentator's box on TV and they're, like, selling all of this and you can only find it here at Immortals Extreme, as they call their station. I don't know, I kind of picked up a meta vibe out of the story, too, among other things, but...
I'd have to read it again with, like, that in mind and see what I come
out. I think you can interpret that. I don't think
that's much of a
stretch.
I think I should probably see that.
But, yeah, the art, I love the art. Art is excellent. Like, I really want to read more of this guy. I've heard of him before.
Yeah, you made fun of his last name.
Grandpa has a funny last name. That was actually
He did Mesmo Delivery, which is a great book. Yeah. He has Furry Water coming out, too, from Dark Horse. Yeah, this is he's done some covers and stuff for Marvel, too, but...
But I thought it was a nice take on Wolverine, too.
It's
kind of the opposite to what Houston's doing in a little bit of a way. Like, you know, Houston does it, like, on the inside, he's just this monstrous killer with no heart. But, like, this one is more of, like, the other way around. Like, on the outside, he seems like this tough guy fighter who can put up with all this. But on the inside, you know, he actually does feel some pain, and he actually does have some emotional, you know... distress.
And symbolized by the flying heart in the ring. he does something so sick, the character, but you feel so bad for him. Like, there actually is some, like, pathos or whatever you want to say in those four pages or whatever it is. Like, you literally feel like you've been through something with that character.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it just so simply. And it's just so effective. That's like a master class in how to do a short story.
I think it lends a lot to his style. I think his style carries a lot of that emotional draw.
Yeah.
That's what I feel, at least.
It was actually kind of... It's funny, just like those four or five pages are only, like, it's actually like some scenes that are kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like you said, there's some meta stuff you could take from it. There's some emotional stuff you could take from it. There's some disturbing stuff you could take from it. Total masterclass, I think. I think that of the last couple of years, that's like a nice piece of art you can hold up and just say, like, here you go, someone did it right.
Yeah, I totally agree, man.
It's a story I'll be revisiting again. It'll definitely be in my best of the year if we ever want to do that. So, but it's something I do. I've already read it like six times.
I've read it twice, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know, it's a great story.
Hell yeah, I agree.
The rest of the first issue of Strange Tales not is nowhere near as good.
Nah, there was barely anything else in there.
The story was good with Kraven the Hunter.
I thought the art in the Spider-Man Mysterio one was kind of interesting. I like the art, but the story I really wasn't
feeling.
Was that the
Dash Shaw one?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
Kevin Azingia that did a story in there, which is kind of funny. It had Wolverine in it, and... I don't know, it's like they were working on like a movie set or something.
Yeah, it's Wolverine versus the Silver Surfer.
Yes.
And it is kind of actually like more to that point of the meta thing I was picking up in the Raphael Grandpa story of like the superheroes.
Not quite as good, but
same point.
The second issue I thought had a lot of good stuff in it, though. Was it Gilbert Hernandez and Jaime Hernandez, you know, Love and Rockets, they did some stuff in there. Overall, though, like, really, the crown jewel of the whole thing was the Raphael Grandpa story. Like,
I don't know, I think the
whole thing was worth doing just to get that.
It was worth $5 just for that story.
Just for that.
I do think the last two-page story with Galactus and Magneto, and when Galactus pronounces Magneto his new herald, and then uses him as a refrigerator magnet, I thought that was kind of funny. It was funny. But, you know, Grandpa story was pretty fucking awesome, but the rest of it was just kind of whatever. I don't know, I read Generation Hope. I know, Gene, you read it, and I think, Joe, you probably read it.
Yes, I did.
You got some thoughts on that, because I enjoyed it quite a bit. I like the feel of kind of, I don't know, like the rebellious feel I thought I gave off of kind of this team just like Hope, you know, kind of having to lead her own X-Men team. And, like, it seems like Cyclops and Rogue are kind of, like, trying to keep her and her team under, like, the official X-Men team, but she's trying to do her own thing and do her own job.
Well, it's kind of coming out of Fraction's X-Men a bit.
I haven't read any of it, but... I don't know, I just, like, as X-Guys, what did you think of it?
I love the fact that Hope hasn't... We haven't lost Hope as the character she was since Cable. Because she was built up for you know, a number of issues and through an event, and I was kind of scared that they were going to turn her into just, like, all the regular random females in the Marvel Universe, but she still is the same girl from the Cable book, and I'm really enjoying that. She tells Rogue off, like, immediately, as soon as they get to this to the fight, and I love that fact, because, like, look who she was trained by, look what she went through. She's not going to just sit there and let Rogue or Cyclops or anybody boss her around. She's seen some of the worst, you know? Like, as bad as the childhood Cyclops has had and Rogue has had, didn't have to fend for themselves and killed wild wolves to eat and sleep out in shifts and all that type of craziness just so they could survive. You know, they didn't go through that growing up. They saw that once they hit their teen years, fine. And Rogue, you know, grew up in abusive parents and all that. But they didn't go through anywhere near what she went through. And I like that she stands her ground whenever it comes to something that she's passionate about. And she still uses guns. Because, you know, she's Cable's daughter. If they took away the guns, I was going to get upset because I was reading. I'm like, I see no guns. But then the guns came. So, what's happening?
I thought it was an odd choice that Kieran Gillen chose, like, body horror as his, like, thing he was going to play with for this arc. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're a body horror for, like, you know, Cronenberg movies or, like, even, like, Akira and stuff like that, like, I thought that was kind of interesting that that's kind of what he's kind of playing around with and what he's kind of having fun with this arc. Not what I thought, like, when I saw the book, like, that's kind of what it was going to start with, but I was happy to see it. Now I guess Kieran Gillen's going to be writing X-Men, regular X-Men. Too.
Yeah, he's kind of doing the how Fraction and Brubaker traded off.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see now how exclusive. I've read the first issue of his run, but, like, the co-written with Fraction one.
Yeah.
But it's not really give me enough yet to see really where they're going with that, but I don't know. I'm interested to see where it goes.
Do you think, because I know Gillen is one of your favorite guys from Phonogram and everything, but do you think, like, he might suffer kind of that Fraction thing where he kind of comes into the X-Men and really doesn't, it's kind of just a mess, or do you think maybe he has
chance? It's already kind of a mess, but...
Because, yeah. I mean,
no,
like,
I think the X-line, like, the Batman line, I think is also having a bit of a resurgence. I just have to see where these go. I've only read the first issue of Generation Hope.
Yeah.
I've read one, you know, the one issue of the Uncanny, you know, I can't say I was, like, overwhelmingly impressed with both, but I liked both enough to continue with them.
Yeah.
Uncanny X-Force, I loved. I think that's another, like, one of my favorite books. So, I'm like, as long as that's in the line, like, I feel like there's a new energy there, too.
I like this book. I thought it started out great. And if I can't have Cable, the fact that I have Hope, I'm fine with that for now. And, you know, Uncanny X-Force is probably the gem of the line right now. And I'm not liking what's going on with Uncanny at all. I don't know.
It really seems like, because I reread...
After the Second Coming, I thought we're going to be in another place, but it seems like we're right back to where it was before that even started. I'm not thinking that.
It really seems like, because I reread the first two issues on Uncanny X-Force, it really seems like that should be, that is the main X-Men book, and you can just forget Uncanny X-Men. It doesn't seem like it's just kind of this side team, like it feels like that is the official X-Men team.
Yeah, I get that vibe.
And I think that's cool. Because, like, I'm not an X guy, but, like, even though I'm just reading this book, I feel like I kind of am in a way, because I feel like I'm reading the X book right now. And I just like that feel Remender brings to it. And it kind of go back to that discussion you wanted to bring up, Joe, like, of kind of the more lighthearted approach and more fun in comics. It's that book is also capturing that, too.
It's not even, though, lighthearted, more fun. It's just an energy.
Yeah.
Because, like, people say that about, like, oh, Jeff Parker's comics are so fun. They're not. So it's like, there's no energy to them. When I read Remender's book, like, okay, like, that has so much energy.
Yeah.
Like, I feel so excited when I read it. I feel so engaged when I read it. They're books that you're getting the entertainment, you're having the fun, but you're also being blasted with all this style, and there's also stuff for you to think about. So, I like, that's more what I meant.
You put it into words better than I do, because, like, I probably just sound repetitive when I say I agree with you, but, like, I do.
Like, I didn't want to, because I'm like, I don't say fun, because I'm like, cause, like, I think that brings up a different kind of comic, you know?
I'm just saying. You put it into words, you put it into words better than
I
do. I think
those are the things I respond to when I read and when I watch movies. Like, I respond a lot more to style
and energy.
The way things are written and energy. Like, energy, I think, is what I respond to most. That was more what I meant to clarify.
No, I get you.
Uncanny X-Force is great, though. Yeah, I do agree with you. To me, that's the crown.
To me, that's the way the line should have went. Not saying, you know, I have my issue with the first issue, but the fact that it's this team, they're squared off, they're not fucking with nobody else, it's just them. And I wish the whole line went that way. Because I'm reading Legacy, too. It's like, I don't want to see Hope in Legacy if she's doing this over there. She's not Wolverine. She doesn't have to be everywhere. There's plenty of X-Men characters that we haven't heard about or seen what they're doing in years. And it's like, I don't want to read those stupid compilation books that come out every 3 months, you know, for $5. And we get nowhere. They're having picnics and doing nothing. Like, I'm like, split the teams up. That way you could focus on more characters.
What's wrong with picnics?
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't mind a picnic.
It's cold outside. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you could draw it in the summer, I guess. But
yeah, I guess.
But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna keep going with this book. I thought it was pretty good. Pretty good first issue.
But that's what I mean. Like, every line though has some good books. Like, more than one.
Oh,
except for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's the one I wish kind of had a good book. But
I mean, like, all right, right now, like, you can read, you know, two, arguably three good X books right now. You could read, you know, two, three good X Batman books right now. You can read two, three good Avengers books. Like, what does everybody complain? Oh, I want to jump in. Plenty of these books are, like, perfect jumping on point. You don't need to have read anything before you've read Batman Inc. You don't think you need to have read anything before you read Uncanny X-Force or Generation Hope.
Nope.
Or the new Avengers books. Like, I think, I don't understand. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I used to be, I was a little more towards the whole, it's hard to jump in at times bandwagon, but then I'm like, then I was realizing I was a hypocrite, because when everyone was complaining about they couldn't jump into X-Men, I was like, no, you can, and I'm like, wait, if I, you know, then I'm pretty much defeating my argument if I say you can jump into X-Men when everybody's complaining about jumping in, because I'm like, we didn't start anything, you know, number one as far as these huge titles go.
I mean, Gene, did you read Nemesis number 3?
No.
Oh, here we go. This is going to be the big speech of why this is awesome. I go with it.
I don't really have a speech. I just thought it was... All right, here's my history with this book. When this was announced, I know me, and I think Alec, you as well, we were really excited about this book. The way it was sold was it was supposed to be like, all right, well, what if Batman was a Joker? And if you read interviews with Miller, like, he was given this intricate backstory as to what they're supposed to be. And then when you actually read the book, none of that was in it. It was not that at all. It was kind of just... the first two issues were pretty bad. That's the way I put it lightly, I guess you'd say. But I had ordered the rest of the series. So I figured I'll just keep getting it anyway. I was like, I had issue 3 came recently. It's still not finished, by the way. But, like, I read this, and it was actually pretty funny. Like, I actually got a kind of a kick out of this.
What was so funny about it? What did it do?
You want me just to spoil it?
Yeah, I don't care. I'm not going to read it.
You might want to read it.
Nah, I don't fucking care. Just tell me.
Basically, the Nemesis character, he kidnaps, like, the children from the hero cop or whatever you want to call him. He has a kid hostage, and basically he makes him kind of admit all this shit, like, over, like, the TV about his failed marriage and, like, all these other secrets he didn't want let out. And then, basically, like, the end of the issue... He basically, after he does this, the guy, the Nemesis guy basically says, oh, it's okay that, he's like, all right, you did what I wanted you to do, I'll release your family. And he's like, relatively unharmed. And, like, he kind of lets them out, and then, apparently I can't even say this, this is how fucking ridiculous this is. He made sure that somehow got the daughter pregnant by the son.
Holy fuck.
And, he fertilized her eggs under anesthetic, but he's also added something none of us have ever seen before. This is what the doctor is saying in here. He's rigged your daughter's womb to completely collapse if we attempt a termination. She'll never have children if we do an abortion, but it's your call.
He went all fucking Garth Ennis on him right there. David Lapham on him.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, like, the last page is basically just a cop with, like, a fucking AK-47 or whatever. And he's like, let's nail this bitch.
All right, you kind of, you might want me to like actually read that.
It was like, I think this comic was not at all what I wanted, but this level of ridiculousness was kind of cool. Like, I kind of like, I can appreciate that. I'm like, if it's gonna be bad, let's just make this as bad as we can and just have like those ridiculous, stupid things happen. But I had a lot of fun reading that issue.
That's insane.
So it's like Batman Odyssey level, maybe even better.
Well, I have read Batman Odyssey too. If you want me to check back,
yeah,
in
let's check back in with Batman Odyssey. Let's see right. this. Let's see what's up.
Let me prepare myself. I got some dramatic readings to do here.
Hell yeah. You gonna do a Walt Flanagan on this one?
Yes, I am.
Yeah?
I have to just buy you guys issues of this, and we can just start reading this like a play.
I'd be down. We could be the one and only Batman Odyssey podcast.
Yeah, just that's it. We just talk about Batman Odyssey all the time. Which I might add has now been extended to 13 issues.
Wow. Is it really selling that well?
I'm going to have plenty of Batman Odyssey material.
Is it even selling that well?
I think it sells enough, I guess. That's
Yeah. That's incredible. All right,
issue number 3, Batman Odyssey, opens with another opening with a shirtless Bruce Wayne, seductively laying down a table, looking at the reader. And basically, after that, it's a couple of pages of Alfred and him awkwardly arguing. Let me read that page for you. I must say, you've gotten quite chatty lately, sir. Can't say that I like it. Go to hell, you freak.
What?
He tells Alfred to go to hell?
Yes.
Wow. Neil Adams must be angry.
So the next issue is Alfred.
No, I'm not even done with this page.
Wow.
He says, is this where I exit staff right with a look of concern on my butlerish face? Oh, goodness. The master has come down with a case of extreme moral fiber. Jerk. Ah, the last word. I knew you had it in you. Before you commit yourself to that next outburst, perhaps you'd like to talk about what happened this evening. Yes, I'd like that, old friend. I think I need to.
Batman lost his mind.
I was like, go to hell, you freak. I thought that was like the next, like he flipped out that quickly. I just thought it was great. All right, Batman then gets shot in the face 3 times, then gets up and just beats the shit out of thugs for about 10 pages, which I have to admit was pretty awesome. The Riddler shows up because apparently he was actually behind the crime, but this wasn't really the crime, and he's actually not really the Riddler or some shit like that. Talia shows up for a few pages, complains and yells about why Batman's wounds aren't being cleaned up, and then leaves, and that's issue 3. Alright, so move on to issue 4. Apparently some little girl got shot by the fake Riddler, and then Batman freaks out. Batman starts beating the shit out of this fake Riddler, and like Commissioner Gordon's like, Batman, stop. Step away from that man. He's like, what? Stop! Stop! I'll not stop! I will not stop! I will take this sputum scum to hell! Are you mad, Gordon? And they basically tells Gordon to go to hell. Then eventually Batman calms down after they announce the girl is alright. Then Batman's like, alright, she's okay, thank God. And Gordon says, would it matter? And Batman says, what do you mean? And Gordon says, you were going to kill him. And Batman, just cool as a cucumber, just says, was I? And he walks away. And then Robin is like, hey, Gordon, can I get a ride back with you?
Oh, my God.
And then Deadman shows up. Man-Bat shows up. Aquaman shows up. And Batman jumps into the sea. And that was the end of it.
Wow.
Sounds like All-Star Batman to me.
Not in the same league as All-Star Batman. Yeah.
That just sounds like Neil Adams is very angry.
Like, but just very I still love about this book is just that, like, page to page, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, I just don't... It doesn't seem logical, like, that's where it's going. Not even for, like, I still... There were 4 issues in, I have the 5th issue sitting over here, and I still... really don't have a clue as to what this is supposed to be about at this point, but, you know, whatever.
Maybe there's more to this Riddler plot, you know? Maybe that's what he's going to build off of. I mean, it feels like Neil Adams might be pulling a Batman Hush. Like, Riddler is behind everything.
It's a piece of crap story? Yeah, you think he might be pulling
It might work, you know? It might work. Ah, damn, I can't believe you're still buying that, but I guess I could see why.
I don't know how much, because like, when it was just a 9 issue, I thought, like, 13 now. I'm like, I don't know, we'll see how far I get.
What if it becomes an ongoing? Would you buy it if it was an ongoing? Say it had like a 50 issue run.
It depends. Like, will it still fuel more material for the show?
I don't know.
Then I might still get it.
We could do a breakdown of all 50 issues or something. I mean, that's just more for a Batman Odyssey podcast.
And good comics. Get back to some good comics. I did want to briefly mention Scalp number 43. This issue was drawn by Jason Latour, I think, who I've mentioned before. He did the backup, the Silver Samurai backup in the first Wolverine issue.
Okay.
Amazing artist. He's doing one of the Vertigo crime books that's coming out. Probably be the best one of that series, just on art alone. But he's another guy, art guy. Look out for it, because his stuff's amazing. He drew this like one-shot issue, which was basically kind of like Jason Aaron doing Bad Lieutenant in the Scout universe.
Oh, wow.
Which I actually thought was really funny. So, yeah, it was actually, I don't have much to say about it other than that, but I just wanted to point out, this is a nice kind of one-shot issue. You don't really need to read the rest of. He does these issues every now and then, which are just kind of one-shots on their own, but, you know, they might feed into the bigger picture later on. But this was just a really good one-shot, and I'm always down for any, like, kind of Bad Lieutenant action, so yeah. This is good.
Is it Nick Cage? Is it Nick Cage or Harvey Keitel?
A little more Harvey Keitel, I'd say.
That's cool. Makes sense. Actually, speaking of Nick Cage, I went back to my high school today, like, for just kicks and like shits and get. Well, actually, here, it's kind of close. I was walking through, like, the library because I was talking to somebody, and I was with my buddy. And when we walked out, there's this poster hanging on the library wall, and it's of Nick Cage holding a book, and he's telling me to read. And I just thought it was
Did
a cool
you steal the poster?
I really want it. I'm really tempted to go back. It's like, just my Nick Cage obsession and him just like doing this like public service announcement of it's good to read and he's holding a book smiling. It's just a really funny poster. I kind of want to own it.
There was a trailer for some Nick Cage movie about driving in front of
Isn't that every fucking movie Nick Cage?
No, it's funny because I was like, I thought it was Ghost Rider 2 for a second, but it wasn't. It was some other movie about some guy. His guy came from hell, and like they want him back in hell. And but it looked pretty cool. Like,
dude,
he
what if
people.
Nick Cage played Al Simmons Spawn?
I'd be down for that.
Oh fuck!
Although
yeah.
He's not black, but still, I guess.
Who cares, man? Who cares? Do some like Robert Downey Jr. Tropic Thunder thing. And just make him black and make him spawn. It'd be so cool.
I am so looking forward to
Ghost Rider 2. I am too. Are Neville Dean and Taylor doing it still?
Yep, writing and directing.
Oh, dude, that movie's going to be awesome.
That's going to be great.
That movie is going to be awesome. I don't
Even
care.
Even more than, like, you know, Avengers or Dark Knight. I'm looking
that's
going to
be. That's going to be.
All right. Okay.
It's going to be so good. It's going to be so good. I can't wait. Is that all the comics?
What else we got here? Let me just see.
Thor.
Thor would probably be the last one I think we can.
Okay. Gene, why don't you start it off? You're the Thor guy.
No, I'll let Joe do it because, you know, I'm not going to. Let Joe start it off because he came into it new, you know, not really reading any Thor, so I want to see what he said about it.
Well, I read Thor, what is it, 611? No, not 611, 615.
15?
615, 616, 617. So.
Yeah, me too.
That's what I've read too.
But to me, I don't know, the way I read this, at least the way I read it was, I thought this was kind of Matt Fraction, like, reclaiming not just Thor, but the fantasy genre, like, giving it its balls back again. In that first issue, like, it opens, like, a total kind of screw you to these kind of comics, opens with, like, four pages of just dialogue. Like, I just thought that was kind of like a really cool way to open one of these issues because it's not at all how you would expect it. And of course, it's another kind of Fraction stock, you know, really talky science character, which is like in all his books. But I there was that those pages in the first issue where they show those blue, like, avatar looking people, like orc people or whatever, and they just get fucking obliterated. And to me, I took that to be like that was Fraction saying, like, fuck that shit. No more of this crappy fantasy stuff. This stuff used to be awesome. It used to be like heavy metal and Frank Frazetta and all that stuff. Like, we're going to bring it back. And, like, this is going to be the book we're going to do that in. And, like, that's kind of what the vibe I've gotten from his whole run so far. It's about, like, making this stuff cool again.
Yeah.
I totally
agree with you. And I think that kind of relates too to, like, how he's mixing the science and magic angle to it, where he's kind of applying the science to it. It definitely is in that vein of, let's make this stuff not so corny and, like, just lame. Let's just not make this gay anymore. You know, let's make Thor cool.
Even the way he doesn't have Thor talk in that stupid, like,
yeah, like,
oh,
Thor,
I don't walk this way. Like, no, none of that. Like, he just talks like a regular person, and for the most part. Like, yeah, you haven't seen much. And even the people in the other world are, like, pretty badass and stuff. And, like, I don't know. I just, so far, I liked it. This is the kind of, This is the only Thor book I think I would want to read.
I feel the same way with it. And I like how Loki has kind of been brought back now as like a kid. I think that's...
What did you think of... Gene, what did you think of that? Like, is that...
As far as what?
About Loki coming back and like...
I like the fact... I think it's actually putting a little more soul into Thor, because that can... Yes, like, yes. You can get very soulless sometimes than just be the muscle. And I'm liking that, you know, he actually cares and missed his brother. I thought that was huge. And I love the fact that he brought Loki back so quickly, because it was going to be something that was going to be, that could have lingered for the whole run, you know? Now yeah. It's out of the way and it's on the table. And the other thing I think what's great about it, I think it's strategy also, because when we break down Asgard and all its people, Loki's probably second to Odin as far as strength. I know people are going to say, no, well, Thor is, but Thor is brute strength. Loki can fuck with your head, powers or no powers. And when he puts powers to him manipulating people, to me, he's second strongest next to Odin as far as all of those guys go. So to bring him back, not only because, one, you miss him and he needs your brother and all that, but you know something's coming and something big coming. You're going to need him. You're clearly going to need him. So I thought that was great.
The thing I think is interesting, too, like about how what you said, like with Thor having more soul to him now, I kind of got the vibe in like that first issue that like Fraction in a way was kind of subtly saying, like, you know, Thor kind of, for things to kind of be like right and the world to be safe, Thor kind of just needs to be that muscle guy. But it seems like he's letting Thor kind of almost just go off and play, like him just going off and looking for Loki. And now in like 617, you just see him like walking down the street and just bullshitting and stuff. But while he's out doing that and kind of just enjoying himself, everything else is kind of going to shit. You know what I mean? Like, there's this threat that, you know, Midgard and Asgard are going to be destroyed, and all these other levels of the Soul Tree or whatever it's called are being like taken over by this force and everything. I think that's an interesting thing going on in the story too. And I like Loki as like a kid now. I think that, like, to the character of Loki, him being like the, you know, god of mischief and everything, it kind of fits him to be like in a child's body. Like, standing alongside Thor, and Thor is kind of just, like, this very, like, majestic kind of, like, again, muscle guy.
Yeah, it's like his mischief could be more forgiven because he's in a child of an innocent, you know, in a body of an innocent, you know, mm-hmm. The appearance he's giving off, instead of being, like, that creepy, super skinny dude.
Exactly.
What did you guys think of the pacing in these issues? I know it's been a point of contention with a lot of people.
We talked about this before.
Too slow.
I'm going to agree with you. What you're going to say is I think it is slow, but I think that's kind of how the story is supposed to go. And the way you phrased it before was a slow burn. And I think that's a good way to look at it. And I think I'm not bored with it. I still find it all very interesting. And it is a slow burn, but it feels like...
Well, Tim Callahan had mentioned something, like, he found the pacing almost musical, like, paced like a movie, like, you know, like, I can kind of see that too, like, if you stop and just, like, look at the art and move it along, like, if you get that kind of, like, that heavy metal, like, kind of music in your head, like, that, like, da-da-da-da, like, get some Iron Maiden or something playing, and, like, it kind of works, it has that, something's coming, like, this is building, or you're going towards something, like... I definitely do feel that.
A lot of that, too, is in the page layouts. Like, yes. You have these long horizontal splash pages, like, kind of really just cut down the middle of the page, these long horizontal panels. And it kind of just feels like, yeah, when you're reading that, it feels like these long horizontal panels are kind of like, these, like, pathways building to something bigger. And a lot of that feel is in the way Fairy is kind of laying out the pages and stuff.
This is the one book that I would love to see him at least try to do motion comic with, because I think this would work with those huge space layouts. And like you said, with the pacing, I think some of those moments are made for you to just sit there for a while and look at all that scenery.
I like it as just a comic, but I could see what you mean.
I didn't say stop the comic.
If you were to do one, this would make sense, dude.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I get you.
But yeah, the art was great. I love Pascal Fair.
I do too, man.
His costume designs, I love how he reimagined a lot of people. He even tweaked Thor costume. You know, I thought the Olivier Coipel costume was perfect, but he tweaked it enough to where it doesn't destroy that costume, but it's something new also.
I think he made it a little more iconic.
Yeah.
Right.
Like a John Woo movie, like, you know, if you watch a lot of John Woo movies and stuff, like, he's very into iconography, like sunglasses and hats, jack, like something where if you saw that person, like, just like in from a distance, you'd know who it is. Mm-hmm. And like, that's like when you look at the cover of like 617, just like that, if you held it far away, you see those four circles on Thor's costume. It's like, that's Thor. Like before, I think his costume had a lot more stuff. Like it was a lot more busy, and like it, I don't know. Maybe I think he's boiled it down a little bit more. Like maybe.
And like to go with you know, Fraction's take on everything. I think it's a good match because he kind of does bring that feel that this stuff is more kind of cool and has a more epic vibe to it. You know, his style and everything, and it does kind of bring that, you know, like science-y blend to everything that I really appreciate. So yeah,
I think this is guy, to me, like, I feel like I think this is his I think this might be, when this is all said and done, I think this might be Fraction's best work for Marvel, but we'll see what happens.
It's still early, and I think Iron Man is that book for him, but we'll see. This has the potential to be that book.
Art is a lot better in this.
No, Pascal Ferrer is an amazing artist, but I'm never going to take anything away from Saul Goloroka because he's still drawing that book and he still knocks it out, and there hasn't been that one filling yet for him, so I'm still giving a lot of credit. And I figured you'd be a little happy too because there is a Jamie McKelvey backup.
Oh, what, in the latest Iron Man? Yeah, it's a Pepper one too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was looking through it before. Jamie McKelvey did a lot of backups and stuff this past.
Yeah, can someone just please like put a little note on the top of the issue or something?
Yeah, because he did. Because I bought the first issue of Osborn.
It's like they're hidden inside all the comics.
Yeah, it's like, oh, here, this amazing art. Yeah. We're not gonna tell you it's there. You gotta go look.
Exactly.
But he's been doing a lot because he because I got Ultimate Spider-Man 150 because he had some pages in that, which is actually a really good issue too. What is it? 1 month to Live, number 5 he drew. He did the backup for Osborn. He did the backup in Iron Man. He's doing the backup in Wolverine next month. So it's like they got him working, but just in odd places. Yeah. Like, why not just put him on a book?
I don't know. That's a question. Write to Marvel right now. Just write an email. Why isn't Jamie McKelvey drawing something?
But yeah, I'm pumped for Thor, man. Especially seeing like the you know, what's coming up next with Odin coming back. I'm like, oh, this is going to be
actually
great.
I wonder if McKelvey might be the artist coming on New Avengers.
Mm. I guess depending what kind of art they're going to have, right?
Yeah. Well, no, but he's been doing a lot of other stuff. Like, he did, like, the pages he did in Ultimate Spider-Man were, like, cat pages. You know, they weren't, like, girl pages.
That would make sense because, you know, Bendis, whenever he kind of uses an artist in a book, it tends to be one of his guys. And, you know, yeah, McKelvey doing Ultimate Spider-Man, that's especially, like, 150, where he's alongside a lot of other artists Bendis digs. That is saying something.
There you go. I'll be quite happy if that's the...
Right, that's your prediction. It's recorded for all to know. If it happens, you're going to be right. Because you were right about the Remender
Venom. Yeah, like, it's this episode.
Right about what?
You were right about the Remender Venom, Tony Moore.
Oh, yes, I was, actually. Yeah, actually, that would be the right prediction.
But we don't have any evidence of it, but we're right. You were correct on that.
Yeah, I did. It was a phone conversation. Yeah. All right, man. Gentlemen, I think we're talked out. I think
we are.
Again, a lot of good shit. Not a bad book in the batch, pretty much this time around.
Hell yeah. Except for that Secret Avengers comic.
But we didn't really talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it.
I'm really wanting to drop this book.
The only reason, I do too, but I'm going to keep going with it because I think at one point I'm going to just like read all of that and then write something on it. Because I think it'll be an interesting
essay. I have to say, though, I didn't think issue 7 or whatever was as bad. 6 and 7 were as bad as you said they were, though.
I still think they were pretty bad.
I still think the problem with that book is the art.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think there's other things too.
Because a lot of what we're talking about, like when we talked about like all that, you know, the pop, sexy, fun action books, that wants to be that book so bad. But yeah. And not that Diodato is a bad artist, but he just does not do that well. That's not his forte.
My more trouble is with the Avengers portion of the book because I don't think that works. Like, I understand what he's trying. I understand what Brubaker's trying, but I don't think it's working.
Yeah, I'd agree. But I think you would swallow that pill a little bit easier if, like, say, you know, one of the other artists we mentioned in his show.
If David Aja was doing it.
If Aja was drawing it, because he can do that shit. Yeah. Even Michael Lark, who drew the one, you know, he did the one issue, or anybody would be nice at this point. Like, anybody else, but because Diodato, just, that's not his stuff. His stuff is very stiff. And it's not bad, but it's not. I don't think that's at all what that book needs. If it had different art on it, I think we'd be singing a different.
But that's the thing that is so weird to me because it worked so well in that first issue. He's always perfect.
Yeah, the first issue was good. Anything. Yeah, it didn't. It hasn't transferred over to the.
No.
No.
Nah.
Except for issue 5.
And I liked him on Dark Avengers, too. That's the thing. Like, I thought he worked well on that book. And I liked him on the, you know, the Alice Thunderbolts. I don't know.
Well, and even Dark Avengers.
Different tones there. Different tones of books.
Yeah, guess so.
So, Yeah, I don't know. I'm just going to finish it because I'm a Brubaker guy, and I don't know. I think at some point...
Maybe this should have been Captain America Inc., where Cap just goes all over.
That's what I think it should be.
Like I mentioned, the super, Steve Rogers Super Soldier was great. Like, I really liked that miniseries. But to me, that dealt with a lot of the same characters that are in Secret Avengers. And I just like, to me, like, that should have been like the first arc of that book.
That's what I think. That's what I think that
should have been. That first issue, then it should have been that arc, and then it should have been issue 5, and then some other story.
Yeah.
I think that'd be one of the best books of the year.
Yep,
I'm just shocked because I thought that would be my favorite of the Avengers books, and it's the least favorite. It's actually the least favorite comic I'm reading right now.
Same with me, man. Same with me. All right, gentlemen. As Joe said already, I'm going to repeat it. I think we're talked out. I think we've discussed everything we can, so we're going to wrap it. So if you want to email your feedback, discuss with us stuff you're reading, maybe you're enjoying comics as much as we are, or maybe if you're one of those people that Joe points out that just hates everything happening right now, and you want to tell us why, you can email at chemicalbox@comicbooknoise.com. We appreciate it. We're interested in what you have to say. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/thechemicalbox. We'll update it here and there with stuff, especially when there's new episodes. If you like the show and you want all the episodes, iTunes is the way to go. Search The Chemical Box. You can subscribe there. It's easy to do. We also have a blog page, thechemicalbox.blogspot.com. And yeah, that's really all that stuff. There's also some other podcasts, Matinee Idols, that me and Joe do. MatineeIdols.com. Check that out. It's a movie show. Fight Club episode. Well, because I wasn't there.
Well, you were there. But that's a whole other story.
That's a whole other story. But, you know, Matinee Idols did a Fight Club episode as well recently. So if you like that movie, check that out. And, yeah, you guys got anything else you want to add? Gene, any last words?
No.
Okay. Well, yes. Thanks for listening in, everybody. We appreciate it. We have fun doing the show. So I'm Alec Berry. Actually, fuck that. We're not saying names. just fuck that shit. We're not saying names. So goodbye, everybody. Turn off.
Fuck you, people. Yay. All right, you can take that out too.
Bruce is like, doesn't matter how high in the air you stick your nose, Alfred. This has to stink to you. And Alfred's like, perhaps you should have killed him. That woman wouldn't be dead now. Oh, fine. Great. Thanks, you bloody stuffed shirt. It's not enough. I'm responsible for that woman's death. You. You want me to play God to forgive you for not being perfect? Fine. I forgive you. Feel better. He's like, you say tomato and I say tomato. Does it matter what words are said? Who says what? Did it just now change anything? Oh, damn. Wrong page I was reading.
Oh my god.
There's a page really goes off on Alfred. Like it's really fucking funny.
These are the bloopers right here.
Mm-hmm.